From the NBC newsroom in New York, this is John McVain with your World News Roundup. From Canada to the Gulf and the Atlantic to the Pacific have come a new crop of reports on mysterious flying saucers seen skimming through the air at great speed. John L. Lewis and important coal mine operators are expected to sign their new agreement today. Washington will tell us all about that. We also expect to hear from London and from Paris. Now your announcer, then I'll be back with your complete World News Roundup.
The Joint Rent Action Committee, which claims to represent 66,000 tenants in New York State, reports that it is gaining strong support for the lifting of federal rent controls in this state. The committee has made a survey in 12 large cities to see how many favor the immediate enforcement of the stricter rent regulations, and the results show overwhelming approval of the idea. New Yorkers coming back to the city will run into thundershowers late this afternoon, according to the weatherman. That's the forecast. But the skies are expected to clear up by tomorrow. The temperature right now is 72 degrees, and the humidity is 81%. Now back to the NBC Newsroom and the World News Roundup.
Weather reports from most parts of the country say this last day of the holiday weekend will probably be cloudy and maybe dampened by a few showers. Railroads are running extra trains to accommodate the millions who return from country to city today, and traffic and highway police are getting ready for a day of work and worry on crowded roads. Between 400 and 500 people have died from accidents of one kind or another across the country since Thursday night. New York has seemed practically deserted for the past couple of days, except for out-of-town visitors. Beaches everywhere within striking distance of the city were crowded. Coney Island, in spite of the dubious cleanliness of its water, had 3 million visitors in 3 days. One of the strangest news events of this weekend has been the sudden increase in eyewitness reports of the mysterious saucer-shaped object seen hurtling through the air at terrific speed. The reports have come from 30 states, and trained, responsible observers declare positively that they have seen the disks. The size of the objects hasn't been verified, but some reports say they're larger than airplanes. The saucers are usually reported moving fast with an undulating motion, sometimes in formations of several together and in a general northerly direction. The Army seems to be taking the report seriously enough to be holding fast fighter planes at Muroc, California, and Portland, Oregon, to try to track down the saucers, photograph them, and if possible, end the mystery. Scientists and military men have said they're baffled. The Army and Navy both say the disks aren't experimental planes. Reports of the disks came from coast to coast. The director of Yerkes Observatory in Wisconsin said descriptions suggest the flight of the saucers is radio-controlled, and they're not any astronomical body, such as a meteor. A Civil Aeronautics Authority weather observer at Zanesville, Ohio, said she saw two at dusk, and they appeared illuminated in some way. Airline pilots have spotted them. At a Columbus, Ohio banquet last night, Lewis Starr, commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, said he hoped a telephone call from Washington would clear up the mystery. The telephone call didn't come when the banquet ended, but Starr insisted the government isn't telling all it knows on the subject. Chairman David Lilienthal of the Atomic Energy Commission said he couldn't throw any light on the matter, but an unnamed atomic scientist is reported to have said experiments in the transmutation of atomic energy in California, New Mexico, and Oregon are responsible. The Franco government of Spain is getting out the vote today. First time Spaniards have been allowed to go to the polls in 11 years. They're being asked to approve Franco's right to choose his own successor. Franco expects a big vote. Anyone who doesn't vote will be penalized. Ballots are being distributed with yes handily already stamped on them. Ballots will be burned immediately after the vote is announced, so a recount or ballot inspection will be impossible. And in Argentina, Franco's friend Perón has been publicizing his intention of making an important speech later today. Reported idea behind the speech is that Perón wants to form a bloc of countries which won't join either the Russian or the United States spheres of influence. The Moscow radio today has been sniffing that the coming meeting of European nations to implement the Marshall Plan is just a rubber stamp affair to approve what the British and French have already decided. Dispatches from Finland, Hungary, Romania, and Yugoslavia indicate that all four of those countries in the Russian orbit will probably refuse to attend the meeting for fear of irritating Russia. Italy has accepted the invitation to the conference. 9 other countries, including Czechoslovakia and Poland, are thought likely to attend. And in Java, the Indonesian nationalists have agreed to settle their differences with the Dutch peacefully. An Indonesian delegation arrived in Batavia, announced it was ready to negotiate a peaceful settlement, as a recent United States note suggested to both sides. Now, Washington's chief topic of news today seems to be the meeting at which John L. Lewis and his mine operators are expected to sign their new agreement. For this news, let's hear Bjorn Bjornsson in Washington.
At 2:30 this afternoon, John L. Lewis and the 200 members of his policy committee will meet here to ratify the new coal agreement. This is the settlement which has been reached with the northern employers. It covers about 150,000 of the United Mine Workers' 400,000 members. The new contract is considered the best that John L. Lewis has ever made for his mine workers. It calls for a 44.5 cent an hour basic increase. Today's ratifying session was to have been held yesterday. It was postponed, said a union spokesman, because the lawyers simply haven't got the language of the agreement worked out yet. He indicated, however, that this would not delay resumption of digging in the 3,000 northern pits next Tuesday. That's when the miners' 10-day paid vacation is supposed to end. In the meantime, the southern coal operators are receiving what one of their leaders has called a complete brush-off. They would like to know exactly what the northern contract calls for, but Lewis is playing cat and mouse with the southern coal producers. Five times the southern operators have tried to learn the terms of the northern contract, but four telephone calls and a letter haven't produced an answer from Lewis. Last year, this country shipped 18.5 million long tons of food to the hungry of other nations. This was revealed in a statement issued by President Truman last night. It was the largest total of food ever shipped from one country in a single year, said Truman. But, he added, we must not lose sight of the fact that even the great efforts of this and other exporting countries fell short of meeting the world's urgent post-war needs for food. Many millions of people are still desperately hungry. The president's statement was accompanied by a report from his cabinet committee on world food programs. The report indicated that prospects for an extremely short corn crop compared with last year may cut down other exports. Nonetheless, said the president, substantial shipments of food, especially wheat, must be continued. President Truman is returning from Charlottesville, Virginia this morning, where he spent the 4th of July weekend. He spoke to the nation from Monticello, Jefferson's historic home, last Friday. This is Bjorn Bjornsson in Washington.
In Britain today, the king has called a national day of prayer. For this and other news of Britain, let's hear from Merrill Muller in London.
Though it was called for domestic purposes, today is a national day of prayer in Great Britain, and it comes on the eve of Europe's partial division into Eastern and Western blocs. A local bus strike marred London's observance of the King's desire for national prayer and seriously affected the royal services at St. Paul's Cathedral. Some 5,000 members of the public were expected at St. Paul's this morning to pray with the royal family, several members of the cabinet, and London's Lord Mayor. But a wildcat strike of drivers and conductors on the central London bus lines kept three-fifths of the seat holders from reaching the cathedral, and the relay of services over a public address system fell on almost empty streets. Only one passage in the service referred to the critical period through which Europe is now moving, the passage that peoples of this land and other nations set aside unworthy and false ambitions and learn to live as God's children and as members one of another. At about the same time this service was being read, Moscow Radio continued its campaign against European cooperation with the Marshall Proposals by repeating an editorial from the official organ, Pravda. The communists now claim France and Britain are setting up a cooperative dictatorship to control all Europe. This gloomy atmosphere, however, is dispelled by the indications of acceptance of the Bevan-Vito plan by 10 European nations and a new political unity apparent within Britain's ruling Labour Party. In an editorial in today's pictorial, Richard Crossman, MP, one of the leaders of the Labour Party's left-wing rebel group, comes out in favor of Mr. Bevan's entire work, pointing out that it is the only salvation and that Bevan has carefully left the door ajar so that unilateral trade treaties with Soviet Russia remain possible. Crossman asks only one thing of Bevan, that when the British Foreign Secretary sends the final plan along to America's Secretary of State George Marshall, Bevan should attach a rider that there must be no American strings on aid to Europe which would forbid any European state from trading when or where possible with Russia. In this way, Crossman indicates, Bevan may also destroy Mr. Molotov's hold on Eastern Europe. This is Merrill Muller in London.
And over in France, the Socialist Party is to hold an important convention. For this and other news of France, let's hear from Henry Cassidy in Paris.
The Socialist Premier of France, Paul Ramadier, is trying today to quiet the dissension in his own party and to strengthen his government for the coming vital week in domestic and foreign affairs. French civil servants have threatened to call a general strike next Thursday unless their demand for higher wages is satisfied. Next Saturday, Paris is due to receive the delegates of the European countries which accept the Anglo-French invitation to an economic conference. And in the meantime, Premier Ramadier is trying to put his own house in order. The Socialist Party is holding a national convention at Mutuality Hall in Paris, the customary place for workers' meetings. The convention began yesterday with a debate on routine party matters, but today it takes up the general policy of the government. And tonight there will be a vote on what amounts to a question of confidence in the cabinet. Ramadier has had to face a growing revolt among left-wing members of his own party who are opposed to his exclusion of the communists from the cabinet and to the Western tendency of his foreign policy. The Paris branch of the party, which leads the left wing, has proposed a program calling, among other things, for a foreign policy independent of the two blocs. In other words, less reliance on Britain and the United States and more leniency with Russia. But the more conservative party members and party leaders are defending strongly their present line. Toward the end of the debate tonight, they plan to call on Léon Blum, the former premier who is the real power behind the throne in France today. And his address should be more than enough to convince the doubting socialists that they should support their own government. Ramadier is expected to come out of the convention with a solid majority vote of confidence. The premier has promised a reply by Wednesday to the demands of the civil servants. If they go on strike, they will cause a breakdown in French communications and interrupt the preparations for the economic conference on Saturday. But with renewed socialist backing, Premier Ramadier hopes to have the scene tranquil for the opening of the conference. This is Henry Cassidy in Paris.
At a meeting of the United Nations Committee in Palestine today, a spokesman for the Jewish Agency argued that Palestine contains sufficient land and water to feed twice or thrice its present population. He claimed the plan to absorb 1 million Jews in Palestine in the next 10 years is practical. Meanwhile, at an Arab outdoor meeting, Jamal Hosseini, vice president of the Arab Higher Committee, warned any Arabs who sell Palestinian land to Jews will be eliminated from the community. And in Southport, Connecticut, Mrs. Walter Knowns says today she's been approached about possible sale of her home to Victor Emmanuel, former King of Italy. The property consists of a 17-room house, 2 cottages, and several acres of land. Now, more news in a moment. In the meantime, here is your announcer.
Just because Jack Benny, Fred Allen, and the usual Sunday night NBC stars are off for the summer doesn't mean that it's still not great listening on WNBC. Listen to this lineup and see if you don't agree. At 7, hear the Jack Parr Show for comedy in the truest Sunday night tradition. At 7:30, it's Mystery on Rogues Gallery, starring Barry Sullivan. You won't want to miss Alec Templeton at 8. Dorothy L'Amour has her own show at 8:30. It's called Front and Center. And guests tonight include Abbott and Costello. 2 old standbys, Manhattan Merry-Go-Round and American Album of Familiar Music, follow at 9 and 9:30. And at 10, it's Story for Tonight. The story, Irvin Cobb's Escape of Mr. Trim. Then, of course, Ben Grauer with the 11 p.m. News Roundup, followed by the story behind the headlines with Caesar Searchinger. That's the lineup. You won't want to miss it. Now, back to John McVane in the newsroom.
In Berlin today, 2 visiting American clergymen, Dr. F.P. Corson, Methodist Bishop of Philadelphia, and Rabbi James Heller from Cincinnati, called the policy of permitting Americans to marry German girls a grave mistake. The clergyman said army chaplains in Germany and Austria reported the German Fräuleins are marrying young American army men to get a meal ticket and entrance to the United States. And in New Delhi, India, 13 beggars were fined $5 apiece today for gambling in the streets. They told the judge they didn't have that much money. So as the judge considerately waited, the beggars took out their begging bowls and passed among the court spectators. In a few moments, they took in enough money to pay their fines in full. And that's the complete World News Roundup. This is John McVane saying goodbye from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.